The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Glad you're with us today. Week 12 came to a close last night. Later, someone here is going to tell you, right, Russell, we'll see if Elmer Fudd can join us for the rest of the show. Russell Wilson is going to leave Seattle after this season, somebody says.
Could it be
the guy who's moving his shoulders over there. Mina Kimes, Dan Orlovsky, Marcus Spears is here. Diana Rossini will join us in a bit.
Like,
don't miss our in-depth conversation.
The tie's nice.
On the evolution of offenses in the NFL, why Bill Belichick saw it coming before anyone else. But we begin with the Rams, you guys, who have lost three straight games. Even after amassing all that talent this season, it's not sitting well, by the way, with cornerback Jalen Ramsey. Here he is after Sunday's loss.
We have guys that are way too good for us to be losing games like this. And losing games in a row, we just got to get it right. We got to play better. Everything has to be better. Because we're too good to be losing games like this, but we're not playing like we're that good right now. So we gotta correct our stuff.
Okay, so the three-game losing streak comes after a 7-1 start to the season. While Matt Stafford has struggled at times, the Rams' defense has not held up their end of the bargain either. LA's defense allowing 10 more points a game during their losing streak and a QBR of 74 compared to 41 in the first stretch. But maybe worst of all, over their last three games, they've allowed an 80% red zone efficiency, not being able to stop teams when it mattered most. Marcus, what do you think's wrong with the Rams' defense right now?
We get blinded by Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, and we don't look at the other nine guys out there that are not performing at the level that they should be. The second thing is Aaron Donald is getting double teamed every single play. That's not anything that's out of the ordinary. But last year, other guys with their one-on-ones won a lot, i.e. Leonard Floyd. That's why he ended up with a bigger contract. We've talked about this on this show 1,000 times. Everybody should benefit from playing with Aaron Donald. Lauren gave me a stat, I'll research it. Aaron Donald has the highest pass rush win rate in the NFL against double teams, 36 of them. The next closest guy is 23. Mm. You know what that means? The dude is still being more productive than the guys that are getting one-on-ones on his own football team. That's the issue, and we talked about this the other day. D.O., I said, look, man, I firmly believe that the Los Angeles Rams miss Michael Brock.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most significant misses that they have because, number one, he had length. Number two, he was able to win a lot of those one-on-ones. And when you look at the rest of this roster, who do you game plan for? Like, what other person on this defense do you say, we are worried about this guy wrecking our offense? No one.
Right.
And I don't know what has happened to Darius Williams.
Yeah.
He played well last year, not showing up this year. They better get it fixed because Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey is not going to win y'all a Super Bowl.
Yeah. My issue is they're dumb and they're soft.
Mm.
I think they're dumb with the way that they use Jalen Ramsey. Certainly situationally, and it showed up against the Packers game, and then soft, and I'm not telling their manhood, but the style of play. Now, Jalen Ramsey's up top. The tight end that he's across from is a tight end. What they do is they bring receivers on the inside. Jalen's wasted outside right now, 8 yards off. This is an easy completion on second six. Here, guys, have a first down, but even more situationally. Guys, it's 3rd and 2. Up top for tight end, Green Bay-wise, is Mercedes Lewis. 3rd and 2 is a man down. Jalen Ramsey's covering Mercedes Lewis. Devontae Adams is inside on the slot against a linebacker. Here, have another first down, Green Bay. That's 3rd and 2. 3rd and 3. Up top, Jalen Ramsey's going to match the tight end again. That's Josiah DeGuara. Now I bring Devontae on the inside. He's on a much lesser defender. Inside slot fade. Hey, Green Bay, have another first down. And then I talk about them being soft. And again, it's not their manhood, but they don't ever challenge people on the perimeter. They just give easy completions. 2nd and 8, here's a 7 yard out to the field. 4th and 2, here's a short little stop route in between, never contacting anybody off the line of scrimmage. Look at the cushion that they're giving these guys. These are catch and throws by the quarterback. Marcus, this one's 3rd and 3, bro.
That's the one that drives me
crazy. Here, have a quick out. They're just giving you these completions. Now, you talked about the talent on the defensive line. What the Rams are doing schematically when they play that soft.
Not helping them. Not helping
them. They're taking the defensive line out of the football game themselves.
You're right.
So, situationally, I'm not pretending that you can call man every play and Jalen follows Devontae every play, but 3rd and 2 and 3rd and 3.
Bro, that's Pee Wee football.
We can't put our best guy on your best guy.
They need 3 yards. Put your feet at 3 yards.
Quarterbacks are getting the ball out so quickly against them. Yeah. There's a bit of a blueprint there. You know, it was really interesting kind of that particular contrast between the Packers and the Rams because Joe Barry, who's the Packers defensive coordinator, comes from the Rams. And we've talked about this before, kind of that tree. And a big part of the Packers' improvement on defense has been the play of their linebackers, not just Devondre Campbell, also Chris Barnes, I think, has been really good. Contrast that with Los Angeles. You talked about there were a couple targets in there where they went after Troy Reader, who plays linebacker for the Rams, number 51. And it occurred to me, like, as that's been a problem in Green Bay for a while, and it feels like they finally solved it. The Rams haven't solved linebackers
are being able to cover.
And I think right now in the NFL, more than ever, you're seeing teams, offenses exploit teams who kind of lack that sideline to sideline linebacker play.
Absolutely.
And you've got a team like the Rams where you've got a star defensive tackle and a star cornerback, but in the middle, they're getting attacked, and it's happening week after week.
Tampa Bay, how important it is to have two linebackers.
Right, exactly. And by the way, we are going to maybe see them right the ship because they play the Jaguars next at home. So that might be a way to get off the schneid. All right, that's on Monday night, too. Okay, let's get back to last night. Washington football team hosting the Seahawks. We're going to pick this up in the fourth quarter, guys. Washington up by 8, going for it on 4th and goal here. Taylor Heinicke with a big chance here, throwing to Logan
Thomas.
So much
time.
Touchdown. All right, so we think it's a touchdown, but then the play would be reviewed. Yeah. And what'd you see here, Dan?
Well, I thought he crossed it, and then I thought that the ball hit the ground but didn't move. The officiating crew, I actually thought they got this one right.
That
I thought that
call,
was the right call.
It was reversed, but 23 seconds to left. Seahawks still have a chance.
Freddie Swain! Russell
Wilson finds Freddie Swain. 32-yard score there. Seahawks now down by 2. So the 2-point conversion attempt and doesn't go the way they'd planned it, Dan.
Yeah, I think this is the right decision by Russell. It's just late. You know, that backside safety went with DK. And if he threw it right, watch this, the backside safety, 20. No, that safety right now goes with DK.
Ooh.
If he threw it early, he had him. But he kind of, like, wanted to get DK as a decoy, and he's just late, and that forces the breakup.
So Washington wins, 17-15. And Heinicke realized a dream. He said he wanted to win on Monday Night Football.
I think he's a man, dude.
The regular season ended right now. Look at that, guys. Washington would own the final wild card spot, but there's still plenty of football ahead. Washington's 22% chance to make the playoffs trails behind other non-division leaders like the Rams, 49ers, Vikings, Saints, and even the Eagles. So Washington's playoff hopes alive and well, okay, but Seattle, not so much, especially after last night. We said it was must win. They didn't win. Dan, why hasn't the offense clicked since Russ returned from injury?
Yeah, I mean, detail-wise, the Seahawks offense is one of the worst units in all of football. You watch this team. They threw a screen to Gerald Everett last night. He catches it 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. It's an inside screen. He turns outside, and it's a 6-yard gain instead of a 25-yard gain. You don't fall to the level of your preparation. You don't rise to the level of your preparation. You fall to the level of your expectations. And their standards are just so low on offense right now.
So, Mina, what changes need to happen in Seattle to fix this going forward before next season? Because there's a lot of pressure on this, especially from the standpoint of Russell Wilson.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what changes don't need to happen watching some of that tape. You know, a lot of it is coaching and execution. But I think
it is, yeah.
The single biggest problem with this football team is the front office. And how the football team is performing right now, it is the product of years of bad decisions at this point. Frankly, dating back to right after Russell Wilson was drafted. I mean, look at their first and second round draft picks since 2013. I mean, just walking you through, starting from the bottom, a lot of these guys aren't on the team anymore. Chrissy Michael, Justin Britt, Paul Richardson, Frank Clark, that was actually a good trade for them. Jaron Reed, Jermaine Fetty, Postage is on the team, hasn't been playing much. Malik McDowell was kind of a complicated case. Rashad Penny, he's been hurt, but that was a bad draft pick. That was a first rounder. DK, home run. Marquise Blair, second rounder, he's been hurt. LJ Collier has been a healthy scratch, played a bit. Daryl Taylor and Jordan Brooks, Duane Scourge. I'd say the jury's still out. Those guys were picked recently. That is a bad record.
Picks on that.
On top of that, Dan, they traded first rounders for Jimmy Graham, Percy Harvin. I'm talking about since 2013. Jimmy Graham, Percy Harvin, and now most recently, Jamal Adams. Two first rounders. the body of work at a certain point is not great. And we know Pete Carroll has a hand in personnel as well in Seattle. I'm just saying,
look at that list. You're dead on.
I mean, when you try to figure out what's wrong with this team, what changes need to be made, how can you ignore the elephant in the room, which is it's not been a well-run football team for a minute?
Well, first of all, Russ gone. All right, I'm sorry, MK.
I don't know.
He gone. He out of there. Because to your point, Dio, and when you talked about the draft, I watched that game last night, and I said, I know every play that's about to happen. Yeah. That's the first part. When I know every play you about to run on offense, that's a problem because I've never scouted entire offenses. The second thing is when you look at Russ in that final presser, to me said, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Like it was almost like a gasp of I gotta calm the seas and the water, bro. That y'all know how I am. You heard me say this before. When dudes get to start talking about past tense and they start thinking about reflectionary in all of their talks, there is something abroad. And yeah. I look at Russ. It's a unmotivated.
There's no fun.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's
maybe
nothing.
Some Freudian slips too in some of these press conferences. Up next for Seattle, they have San Francisco for the final time this season.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Back on NFL Live, the Cowboys dealing with a COVID outbreak, which includes the head coach, Mike McCarthy, who will not be able to coach the game Thursday in New Orleans against the Saints. Defensive coordinator Dan Quinn taking over the head coaching duties, and owner Jerry Jones was asked about Quinn today.
He's had years of on-the-field experience and been that many games or that many weeks or that many months since he's been out there making those in-game calls. We're so fortunate to have him, so fortunate to have him as recently as he's head coached and been on the sideline. If anybody can, he should be able to handle what he needs to do as defensive coordinator right there on the sideline. And he was obvious choice there for Mike to make.
Yeah, so the Cowboys luck out a little bit there with Dan Quinn's experience. We now welcome in our NFL reporter, Diana Russini. And Diana, we just heard from Jerry Jones. You actually were able to text with Dan Quinn a little bit today. What can you tell us about the Cowboys' outlook for Thursday with this team?
Yeah, in typical Dan Quinn fashion, he's obviously very excited about this opportunity to be the head coach, of course. Mike McCarthy is still very involved in the team meetings. He's going to do as much as he possibly can. We know that the Cowboys are operating virtually at this point, but Dan Quinn has the experience, as you heard Jerry Jones allude to. And Laura, if you recall, going back to the summer when Jerry Jones was talking about Dan Quinn, at times it sounded like Dan Quinn was his favorite person on the planet. So he has certainly a lot of confidence that he can get this job done. So other issues, though, involving the Dallas Cowboys at this point, right? Their number one wide receiver, Amari Cooper, can get off the COVID-19 list at this point, right? So he's done the time. The problem is he still has symptoms. According to Mike McCarthy, he's still not feeling well. So basically what needs to happen is the Cowboys doctors have to clear him as well as the league. That hasn't happened yet. So he can return. He's just not feeling well. And essentially Mike McCarthy saying, if Amari Cooper doesn't practice tomorrow, the chances of him traveling to New Orleans are pretty much over. So at this point right now, we still do not know whether or not Amari Cooper will be active for Thursday's game against the Saints.
Yeah, certainly hope he feels better. He's missed the last couple of games, and you think about the timeline there, that's been quite a while. The horns are tooting over there. Diana, we got more from you coming a little bit later. Apparently the Dan wagon's over there at Diana's house. All right, let's get to the 49ers. They're on a three-game win streak. Their playoff chances have gone from 22% to 70% now, before the streak at only the 22%. Helps that their three highest single-game rushing yard totals this season have come in the last three games. Right. And by the way, Debo Samuel expected to miss 1 to 2 weeks with a strained groin. But let's read and react around the league a little bit. Marcus, what exactly has changed for San Francisco in recent weeks?
They done got back to being bullies on the block. And that's what I'm talking about, Kyle Shanahan. Stand up for the game that's supposed to be played. Listen, this team, obviously, we've talked about how hard schematically it is to defend this run game. But we know, using Debo, obviously, he's going to be out a week maybe or two. But when you look at this scheme, don't get it twisted about the bells and whistles and the thing flying across your eyes. They are role grading people. They've gotten back to what took them to a Super Bowl. In turn, Jimmy Garoppolo is playing better as well. They really just went back to square one. It's nothing magic that they've done. If you watch the San Francisco 49ers during their Super Bowl run and you watch them the last three games, a lot of things look very familiar in what they've been doing.
Yeah, so basically we're just making football way too complicated. Just run the ball and everything works out, right? Our resident run game expert here. All right, stop me if you've heard this before about Justin Herbert. He's pretty good. In fact, he's leading the NFL in QBR right now, but he has the fifth shortest average depth of target among qualified passers. When Herbert does launch the ball at least 20 yards deep, he's got the fifth best completion percentage in the league. So, Dan, this kind of makes you say, are the Chargers holding Justin Herbert back in any way?
Yes. They need to add or grow their catalog of plays. The Chargers call basically the same five plays almost all game. They're calling stick, a flat with an out route. They're calling all go special, four verticals. They're calling sail, which is, you know, a deep out route. They're calling slot option or halfback choice almost every game. Now, here's my issue. Situationally or formationally, they're the same thing on a consistent basis. Out of the same formation or third and seven plus, I'm calling the same plays, or P and one, meaning the first play of possession, it's the same stuff. That was to early start the game. This is the same play to start the second quarter, or excuse me, the second half. Same stuff. So defenses are going to see that. They got to bring more variance to their kind of offensive scheme, because right now it's the same plays over and over and over again, and they're hindering the growth of Justin Herbert. They've handcuffed him. They don't throw the ball downfield enough. But more so than that, they got to add more plays to their arsenal of offensive calls.
Yeah, and as we showed you with the numbers of what you're saying, it's not like Justin Herbert can't do it. He absolutely can. Up next, they go to Cincinnati, and actually Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert getting to play in the NFL for the first time. All right, let's go to the Colts. A lot of focus on Jonathan Taylor, Mina, for that offense, but you think there's someone on the other side of the ball that may be the key to their success down the stretch here. Who is that?
He's right there. It's Kwity Paye. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually feel more confident in the Colts offense and the defense right now. I mean, don't get me wrong, the defense is fundamentally sound, but they have struggled to rush the passer. 26th in pressure rate so far this season. It's kind of like the DeForest Buckner show, and that's it. However, Kwity Paye, their first round draft pick, has been coming on hot. 3 sacks in 3 games. You see the skills that you saw in college on display, which is the freakish athleticism, the high motor, and if he can keep this up, Colts are dangerous.
Today is Giving Tuesday, a global day of giving, and it's also the launch of ESPN's V-Week. We can all be a part of something big today by supporting cancer research, which is needed now more than ever. If you're able, give now at v.org/donate. 100% of what you give goes to cancer research. Let's bring Diana Russini back in for some news and notes around the league. Diana, what can you tell us about the latest in New Orleans with running back Alvin Kamara ahead of their game on Thursday night?
Yeah, we're talking 3 weeks that they've been without their best weapon, and every day he seems to be getting better. It's still questionable headed into this game. He was seen at practice this afternoon. He was participating in some red zone offense, obviously. That usually is a good sign. But I've also covered enough teams and have seen players participate in red zone and they're inactive. From what I can gather in terms of talking to some people, this is going to be a day-to-day decision. Then on the other side, we've got the Taysom Hill situation and Trevor Siemian. What are the Saints going to do with the starting quarterback position? Sean Payton saying that right now it could be either or. But really what you should keep an eye on here is the fact that this offensive line is completely beat up. So when you see an offensive line that's beat up, you know that that means that most likely the run game needs to be a big part of their game, that runner being Taysom Hill. So it would make all the sense in the world if Hill was to get this start. And then finally, Arizona, right? Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, they've been out for almost a month, Laura, and all signs are pointing up for both of these players. Head coach Cliff Kingsbury talking to the media saying that they're starting to look really good, and it's really going to come down to how they feel at practice over the next few days. So that could be obviously really good news for a team that did really well without their stars.
I was going to say, I mean, they weathered the storm without their two best guys, which is pretty impressive considering how a lot of teams would have fared there. Thanks, Diana, for the latest around the NFL here. And today, guys, we're taking a deep dive into the evolution of offenses in the NFL, why the product we're seeing on the field has changed drastically in a short period of time. How has it changed? Well, one metric in particular tells the story. Look at this. Rushes plus completions per game. So here's the list of the teams who average the most completed passes and rush attempts. You may be asking, what's the relevance? Well, seven of these teams are first in their division rankings. The other three are second. They're the best in the NFL right now. So guys, we see the correlation between having a high mark in this stat and success thus far in the season, but can we explain the cause? And that's what we want to do here. Once again, the rushes plus completions per game, the really important thing here. Dan, what has caused teams to lean into this as an important metric?
Well, that graphic, that's kind of the era that we grew up in. You know, that was something that we heard a lot of times is the good teams offensively, they would, you know, 55 rushing and completion attempts per game. And then there was that transition in the NFL, kind of like 2013, where it became spread and shred, spread them out, and we're going to throw the ball over the place. It was really because the RPO game transitioned to the NFL. We saw so much man coverage because of it. And now defenses have changed, and it's a different NFL, and it shocks me how much it's changed and how quickly. First of all, teams are blitzing way less. They're playing much more zone coverage. They're giving quarterbacks way less kind of those one-on-one, easy kind of recess. My guy better than your guy type of throws. Defenses are playing way more of those two shells, right? When you're doing that, you're daring teams or challenging teams. You got to run the football. Quarterback's got to be patient. Check the ball down. These athletic quarterbacks, you got to just take those five-yard completions. They're taking away the explosive plays. They're challenging offenses. You got to go on 10, 12-play drives over and over and over again because you're going to make a mistake along the way, right? You're going to hold the ball, get a penalty, force it, and it's going to be a turnover. So they're challenging. And then they're thinking, well, we're going to be really good on third downs, or we'll be really good defensively in the red zone and we'll force those field goals. It very much so has gone back in time 20 years ago to kind of when you and I entered the NFL. And the teams that have adjusted the best are those teams that are playing good offense right now. And there's teams that are still stuck in kind of that 2018, 2019 world. It is not 2018 or 2019 anymore. You know, we're not going to have quarterbacks throwing for 55 touchdowns or 5,000 plus yards. It's just not the way that defenses are allowing offenses to play right now.
So since week six, basically, you know, halfway since the beginning of the season, the number one offense in the NFL is the New England Patriots using EPA per play, which basically accounts for, you know, game situation. The number two offense is the Indianapolis Colts. Wow. That is wild to me. And it reflects exactly what Dan is saying. Yeah, which is two run games, but also two teams that can string together long drives with completions as well, as you're saying, through the air. Maybe not necessarily explosive drives, although Indianapolis has an explosive passing attack. And it really, it's incredible, I think, because it's rooted in what we're seeing now. But as you said, a lot of it has to do with what happened the previous 5 years, which is the trend in football you're describing, basically spread it out, bombs away. That changed how teams were built. Yes. Teams, defenses were living in their sub packages. They still are for the most part. So they went lighter and having five or more DBs on the field. Yeah. So you're investing your resources into safeties and cornerbacks and your pass rush, but, you know, not so much size. And all of a sudden, you have a team like New England that is sort of zigged, whereas, I mean, granted, they have a very good secondary, but offensively, I'm just saying, they have built an offense that can win with power, with size. I mean, look at their offensive line. Look how big those dudes are. And suddenly, if you're a defense that doesn't have that size, How do you match up with them when they get into two tight end sets or put two running backs on the field? We're about to see that New England team play a Buffalo Bills team that I think was built the other way. Exactly. And it's suddenly a styles makes fights challenge for Buffalo, because not because they're worse or whatnot, but because they're simply built different.
It's that just game on Monday Night Football, by the way.
Yeah, it's crazy to me how quickly it happened.
Yeah.
Like how quickly it changed back to 20 years ago.
Y'all know I'm old school. It never changed for me. And I get it, like, totally understand. So the way I was brought up in football, playing for Nick Saban and Bill Parcells, was that from an offensive standpoint, the run game dictates to the defense. That is how coordinators want to dictate what they can do from an offensive perspective. That is my mindset. So when everybody at home hit me say run the damn ball so much, that's the school of thought that I come from. And then when I look at the NFL, and it's been little hints there even beyond New England, because the reason Baltimore has won a lot of regular season games is because they played that old school style of football that you would see once in a while when, you know, they gonna tote it 40 times when you coming off 4 weeks of defending the pass.
Imagine
50
if they
times.
Were healthy, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Know?
So this is always for me, the way I've looked at football, I've just, from a very general term, the teams that run the football have more success consistently.
Well, I think you got to be able to do both.
Absolutely.
At the moment in particular, like you mentioned, the Ravens, we just saw them dare Cleveland to throw the ball. And look, Baker's hurt and all that, but I'm just saying, like, you have to have the sort of versatility on offense that over the past 5 years previous to this, you didn't need that.
Correct.
You could be a team that only threw the ball and it was fine. I mean,
the runs and completions graphic in 2018, 2019, that did not matter.
Exactly.
Those teams were not relevant. It was creating explosive plays and how many points you could score. And nowadays, it's just not the case.
Look, even during that time, Gurley was in L.A. running over people.
But they were a throw-first team. New England was a throw-first team. Philly was a throw team.
But I'm not talking about what type. You can be throw-first.
Right, but
my point has always been, you are going to have to come back to the run game. Well.
But
at
there was an
point.
Era in the NFL where that was not a reality.
I totally disagree with that.
Interesting thing, I think, guys, about all this is somehow Bill Belichick looked across the league. He saw all the personnel on all these teams. He said, you know what? I'm going to build my team differently. I'm going to make this zag when it's going to benefit me most.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, will the real Cincinnati Bengals please stand up? You have the team that has 3 divisional wins by 14 points, including dominating the Steelers Sunday, holding them to just 10 points. But then you got 5 games decided by 3 points or fewer this season and not being able to close them out. Just a little inconsistent from this team. But Marcus, how did the Bengals defense keep Pittsburgh in check the way that they did Sunday? The frustration you see on Big Ben's face is very telling. That was really the story of the entire game.
They got back to getting pressure on the quarterback with 4. Trey Hendrickson had a strip sack. Hubbard was getting home. And then when you look at these DBs, like we talked about with the Rams, y'all, these dudes were squatting. Mm-hmm. They were waiting. Like, hey, we know Ben about to throw it. We ain't scared of you. He hit one. Eli Apple intercepted one, and then he hit Chase Claypool on another one down the sideline. Yeah, in football, you got athletes. You're going to make those plays. But I'm going to bet that Ben Roethlisberger is going to stand back there, who's immobile, and he's got to get the ball out of his hands fast. And the thing that disappointed me more than anything about watching that game, it was the same plan that the Bengals beat them with last year that knocked them off their high horse when they were winning all of those games. So, listen, that team, the Bengals are very dangerous in this regard. If that front four gets going, they got guys on the back end that's going to take the ball away. And I don't know, it, like, once you get into the playoffs, it becomes about playmakers a lot.
Yeah.
And the Bengals have a lot of playmakers on this football team with that run game helping them.
Yeah.
Speaking of said run game, I think there's been a seismic shift in their offense, and it's to the outside zone run game. Yo, I'm breaking this down.
Okay.
I'm actually, like, super, super excited for this one. The outside zone run game has become a foundational part, an identity part for this offense. Now, when I talk about the outside zone, I'm going to use the word synchronicity. Big word. I got it right.
Good job,
okay,
Dan.
So everyone pay attention, because this is outside zone. Joe Mixon, they ran it 8 times the other day. I think it's become a huge part of who they can be, because you can build so much stuff off of it. Now, when you talk about the outside zone, first starts with this offensive line. There's a couple things we got to pay attention to as we go. Now, everyone pay attention to the left arm, okay? Look at the left arm of all these guys. This bent left arm, everyone has their left arm in that L position. Now, the second thing is the steps. When you do that left arm to start off, you want everyone's right foot to be in the ground. So as you step, you got the arm coming up and the right foot in the ground. Now everyone's left foot's got to be up off the ground. See that synchronicity right there? Everybody's stepping to that same direction. That is outstanding by those 5 guys up front. The next step is the back. Outside zone is 2 things, your track and your angle. His starting track has got to be that outside leg of that tight end right there. Joe Mixon has got to aim there no matter what. That's your starting point. And the second thing is, you are paying attention to that block right there, that 3 technique, that 5 technique. Wherever he goes, you go opposite. So the starting point synchronization is great, and the track by Joe Mixon is fantastic. Now we go to the double team. So here's this block right here. Those 2 guys right here, they got these 2 guys. That's the double team, 1-2. Now this block right here between the center and the guard, these 1-2, these got these 1-2. Now I've never pretended to know how hard this block is, because these guys got to do such a great job of that right arm for the center staying there as he climbs up to that guy. And then big fella, right guard, has got to do everything he can to fight across, keep his helmet across, and get that defensive tackle. The last part is this. Back, you got to press the hole. What that means is you got to get to the line of scrimmage. So often, backs try to make a cut before. You got to get to the line of scrimmage. Now, often, guys, I'll try to cut back there. No. Joe Mixon, press the line of scrimmage. And there's that block right here. I told you there's the block right there. There is that perfect blocking seam in that outside zone, and that is a huge chunk. It's become a big part of their offense. Now, I got questions. Don't fail me, okay?
Oh, no.
Who's one of the best kind of zone run game coaches ever?
Like the father?
Yes.
Alex Gibbs.
Oh, Gibbs.
Offensive line coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. Frank Pollock learned under Alex Gibbs.
Shanahan,
now,
too.
No, who's one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL right now?
Right now? Callahan. Bill Callahan.
You know who his son is? Brian Callahan. You know who the offensive coordinator for the Bengals is? Brian Callahan.
A-plus is on the quizzes.
Top quiz, Nina. Hashtags.
Good job.
I used to be devastated seeing Clint Portis
you
in that.
See that outside zone right there?
It's the worst.
It's all about execution. Yeah. I mean, I've watched all the Bengals runs. It's literally like the same thing over. But it's all about the players and how they execute. I love the Bengals run game right now for all the reasons Dan described. I also just love the Bengals receiving group. They're almost like a basketball team because they have such complementary skill sets. So right now, Joe Burrow is 2nd in the NFL in yards per dropback versus man coverage. Some of that is because of Joe Burrow. A lot of it is because he has not one, but 2 receivers who are just deadly, deadly versus man in Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. T. Higgins, especially in this game, his skills versus man on display. And then if you're a defense and you're like, okay, well, we're going to play zone against you, then he's got Tyler Boyd and Uzama working underneath. They've got like a different guy for every defensive look. And it's such a great group of guys.
Skill position.
What was your big word?
Synchronicity.
All right, you know what? It's synchronicity. So I'm sorry.
You can't knock me down.
Oh, look at this. Look at us.
Just in case you don't current of events.
Yeah, so you had the definition right, but it's synchronicity. Anyway, glad we cleared that up. You can so proud of your big
you
word.
So smart. You're not.
That touchdown.
Let's get to the Dolphins. They won their fourth straight game this weekend following a 1-7 start, becoming just the third team since 1990 to win at least four straight immediately after having one or zero wins in the first eight games. Their quarterback in those last three games, well, Mr. Tua Tagovailoa. And so when you think about what they've done, it's been pretty impressive. His 87% completion percentage on Sunday isn't the only remarkable note about his play. In fact, this season, Tua ranks eighth in QBR, second in completion percentage, despite playing behind an offensive line that ranks dead last in pass block win rate. How's he compensating? Well, he's just getting the ball out in 2.5 seconds on average, the third fastest mark in the NFL. He's like, all right, if I don't have a whole lot of protection here, let me just get this thing out as quick as possible and protect myself. Dan, why do you think Tua has seen more success in recent weeks?
He's sudden and he's surgical. The same kind of traits that we saw with him in Alabama, would they transfer over? They are. He's healthy finally. Jalen Waddle's come on, and you're just seeing the ball. It's like pop, pop, pop. It's almost just how quickly it happens. Now, your point, Ruddy, like it's got to happen that fast, but the feel that Waddle has for stuff, how quickly Tua, like very rarely does Tua like hold the football. It's put your foot in the ground and get the ball out. I think he's got a great understanding of what they're doing right now and kind of who they aren't as a football team. But I'll say this, the number one thing that I feel watching Tua play over last month is what if? Like, what if you get that kid with an offensive line? What if you get him like another receiver or two? Because I firmly believe this. If that happens, if they do the right thing and protect him, then he becomes a Drew Brees type of player. I truly believe that.
Yeah, and that's the concern, right, which is, okay, well, he's developed here with this offensive line, and he has made the improvement that you described.
62 out of 77 last
year. Well, last year, I mean, when he played, at times you saw some hesitation, some hitching. Yeah. That's gone.
Yes.
He is decisive. That ball is coming out quick.
Yes.
And what you saw in particular in this last game is, oh, Jalen Waddle, who, you know, when they drafted him, you were thinking deep threat. Yeah. He's going to be yards after the catch guy because he's got that kind of speed, which is wonderful. However, the additional step you would like to see this offense take, which is Tua pushing the ball downfield, I don't know if it's possible with this offensive line. And that's it kind of goes back to what you said. What if? Because I don't know if it's going to get better in the near future.
It's hard to evaluate. But I mean, here's the reality. Tua is now 9-7 in his NFL career. And I think some of the comparison problems with Justin Herbert have affected him, right? And Justin Herbert's success plays into this. But maybe take all that away. Is Tua the guy for the future in Miami?
Yes. Yes. And the more he plays, the better he'll get. Like, you have to play this game. It's the same argument we had about Justin Fields as the season started. These dudes have to play.
Yeah.
Like, reps is how you become a better football player and how you evaluate. And we all know the circumstances. We sat at the draft and we talked about Mac Jones. If he ends up in New England, he's going to have success. Coincidentally, he's having success. Look, when Tua came out of college, all right, it was one of the prettiest balls I had seen of any college football player. He put the ball where it needed to be. I think a lot of people forgot. Tua stood at Alabama and went toe-to-toe with Joe Burrow in the game. Like, this kid is a really good quarterback.
Yeah.
And he's been dealt a bad situation in Miami. All of the circulation about getting quarterbacks and exactly, bro. So if you buy into Tua and you understand his skill set, he can be your quarterback moving forward, and you can win with him.
Yeah. Well,
that's all he's done is won when he's been a starting quarterback.
As the fifth overall pick, they should be invested in finding a future there for him if it makes sense. Time for one more thing before we go, and LSU got a new coach. Brian Kelly comes over from Notre Dame. Coach Marcus is LSU Tigers. You see him there. He's getting off the plane. He's headed to Baton Rouge. What do you think of this hire, Marcus?
I love it. I love it. Look, it's not sexy to the ears and the eyes if you're not a real football aficionado, but it's so much substance in this pickup. It's so much success. Look, Brian Kelly has won. He has a 75% career winning percentage. Notre Dame has been in the college football playoff, the BCS championship. So, yeah, you ain't going to go crazy like if Lincoln Riley came to LSU. But you better pay attention because this is going to be a consistently good football team, and he's going to have the best athletes he's ever coached in his career.
Yeah, 10 years, $95 million. Who replaces Brian Kelly at Notre Dame?
First name should be Luke Fickell. The second name should be Marcus Freeman, who's their defensive
coordinator. Yeah.
Right now, I'll throw two flyers out there.
Oh, boy.
Dabo, maybe?
Ooh.
And Pete Carroll?
Oh, God.
What?
I knew you were going to do that. I had it. I sensed it. I was like, why are we leaving so much time for
him? You think Josh McDaniels would entertain a college?
No, they need a CEO, not a great play caller.
Also, Josh McDaniels, I mean, he's the future in England.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm going to stay here.
Rushing it this year, by the way. Rushing it.
Yeah, he's
Carroll?
Crazy.
You believe that?
Well, Tigers.
Okay, well, we'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live. A little
synchronicity.
Synchronicity.